This is Remnant Bride Radio, bringing to you Time with Gary, a common man with an uncommon understanding. Now, from RemnantBrideRadio.com, here's Gary Naylor.
Hi, this is Gary Naylor. Let's spend some time together. On October 24, a posting on the Remnant Bride blog came out called Angels Will Bear You Up. Now what it is, it's a takeoff on the writing that came out before that called Resurrection and Judgment. Now if you have not read either of those, or even both of them, I greatly encourage you to do so. I was talking with the gentleman today, and boy, was he thrilled with Resurrection and Judgment. Had a good response from Angels Will Bear You Up. And, well, let's just find out what another gentleman thinks right now. Chris Meyer. Chris, what did you think of that writing, Angels Will Bear You Up?
Hello, Gary. Hello, everyone. Well, I thought it was wonderful, and I also thought that it was a good continuation of the Resurrection and Judgment writing. And one of the obvious questions that I had to ask myself was, why is Yahweh still highlighting or spotlighting this issue of, we continue to stay on this vein of Yeshua resurrecting in an earthly body and not ascending in an immortal, incorruptible body. I just wonder why Yahweh is still highlighting or spotlighting this issue.
Well, I would like to think it's timing, Chris, kind of like whenever you get ready to fly off in a plane, you know, you need to know a little bit about the trip before you get started on it. So I would like to think that. I do know that people have really enjoyed it, that it gives clarity to what Yahweh will do and why. And, of course, that is one of the qualities of the Remnant Bride. It's not just that we present truth. We give the government of why Yahweh does it. And I'm sure there's even more that we could fathom. I sometimes say that Remnant Bride writings, really as wonderful as they are, the reality is we've just begun to scratch the scratch on the scratch. But hopefully what we are getting is the royal jelly that's going to convert us workers into queens and be the bride to Yeshua. Now, do you have any questions, Chris, about it, or any comments? I'm going to address two other points that have come up since then and add them here in the broadcast. What's your comments or questions or anything?
Well, the quick comment I would make would be that you have presented, you know, if you would, as a prosecuting attorney or a defense attorney would in a court of law, you've presented a very strong case for Yeshua ascending, coming out of the grave and getting his earthly body and then ascending to receive an immortal and corruptible body. So I think you've made a very strong case in these last two writings, and so I'm grateful for it.
Of course, what we're looking at in Angels Will Bear You Up, we key off the passage in Psalm 91, verses 11 and 12. I'll read it for you. For he will give his angels charge concerning you to guard you in all your ways. They will bear you up in their hands, that you do not strike your foot against the stone. I was talking with another gentleman today, Kyle Nixon. He's been a longtime associate with the Bride, going back to whenever we were just getting started on the Internet. One of the things that he was excited about was how this brought understanding and light to John 1:51. And this, of course, is where Yeshua saw Nathanael, and when Nathanael came to him, he said, "Yes, I saw you sitting under the fig tree." And Nathanael got excited, and Yeshua answered him and said, "Because I said to you that I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You will see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see the heavens opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." Now, one could look at that and say, well, that sounds like Jacob and the angels that were ascending and descending. But Kyle said, God does not lie. They have to see this at some point. And Yeshua's ascension at Bethany after his resurrection could well have been the fulfillment of this passage, where he would have ascended into heaven with the angels. Will people see the angels when we, the bride, ascend? I don't know. I was talking with someone about that today. But it seems that this could well be what Yeshua was referring to, was his own ascension, when he said, when the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. And, you know, the other would be Jacob's ladder. But one of the things that another person pointed out, and it brought excitement to them, was the passage of Matthew 3:15. Here we read, but Jesus answered to John the Baptist whenever he went to John the Baptist, and John was reluctant to baptize Yeshua. Yeshua said to John, permit it at this time, for in this way it is fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness. Now, what we talked about and what has been written about is that whenever Yeshua came and was baptized by John on atonement of 29 A.D., he literally fulfilled atonement, the atonement for our sins, which establishes our righteousness. And so this passage really points out the fulfillment that took place at atonement. He said, it is fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness. That's a wonderful passage. And I'll let you make a comment in a minute, Chris, on these. The third one would be, and I got to thinking about this. We have questioned whether Elijah actually ascended into heaven when he went up in the whirlwind. My thoughts after this writing was, no, he obviously didn't ascend into heaven. If he had, he would have ascended with angels, bearing him up. His ascension was literally prophetic, so that it wasn't an ascension into heaven, but the whirlwind prophesied of the activity of the second remnant at the time of our own ascension. I have said before, it is going to be a whirlwind of activity. I'm ready for that whirlwind of activity to take place. And we'll talk about something here in a minute that gives us a little more hope in that. Any comments about any of those three, Chris?
Yes, and of course, you know, we talked about Enoch as well, and I was just reading just yesterday that the scripture where it talked about Enoch walked with God and was no more. And so I think we agreed that that was a type and shadow as well, that it doesn't say that angels came and took him, but it doesn't say that they didn't either. And so, but Yeshua said in John that he's the only one that's ever ascended, and so understanding this really has brought these things to light for us. It's given us a better understanding of these things.
Yes, and I love that clarity. I love definition and clarity, because when you see it, it also supports everything else. The brother I was talking with today, he said, you know, the thing that I've appreciated about you over all these years is that what you teach does not contradict with what you have taught before. It's in harmony with everything you've taught before. He actually complimented me. He said, I don't see how you keep it all in your head. Well, I don't either. But he was amazed that it was able to continue with this consistency. And we've called it, of course, a seamless garment of truth. Finding this about ascending via the angels, and of course, oh, let us not forget NASA. Ah, what a wonderful testimony. That which carries man up into the heavens is the very thing that's spoken of in Psalm 91, verse 12, where it says, they will bear you up in their hands, which is NASA. They will NASA you up in their hands. And we looked into the history of the name NASA. There is no way that anybody was trying to repeat that Hebrew word. I think it was Yahweh just giving us a little nugget saying, I know what I'm doing. You're on the right course. And yes, these angels will NASA you up. And he will fulfill that which in the natural men have attempted and yet come short. Chris, if we could talk here just momentarily about this. Because you and I were talking on the phone about this very subject, and I didn't know where to speak of this, and this is a good time. NASA is, if you would, a Tower of Babel. It is man's efforts to get men into the heavens. And that's their best effort, is to get them into the heavens. And, of course, they have failed on two occasions, which they have actually brought death in that effort. And there are so many things that we do as flesh people that are truly towers of Babel. The cars we drive, the airplanes that we fly, their efforts to enter into that heavenly body that can be transported instantly. It's our efforts to get into that place towards the fulfillment of the heavenly. The United Nations, equally. It's an effort of man to bring forth the millennial kingdom, and yet they failed. Of course, the Third Reich, Adolf Hitler, he wanted to establish the Third Reich, or the Third Kingdom, which was his effort to bring forth the millennial reign, and it was a Tower of Babel that had to be brought down. It was quite an effort that represented the kingdom, because his whole aspect was to bring purity and to remove corruption. He removed all of their jazz music, corrupt art. He wanted only beautiful art, harmonious art. He wanted only harmonious music. That's why he got rid of the Jews, and it's why he killed so many millions of the people who were infirmed and disabled. His whole effort comes out of this yearning for man to bring forth the perfect. And yet, every time that man tries to bring forth the perfect, they're like Uzzah, who reached up to stabilize the Ark of God. It's always death and destruction. Christianity is nothing less than a Tower of Babel. It's man's efforts to reach up to the heavens. That's what the Tower of Babel was. It reached up to the heavens. The same thing as Nebuchadnezzar, the parable concerning him, the prophecy concerning him, was that he was a tree, the top of which reached into the heavens, and it covered the earth. Nebuchadnezzar is a type of Christianity. It's Mystery Babylon. It's a Babylonian effort. And what does Babel mean? It means confusion. And with 35,000 different denominations and sects, that's exactly what Christianity is. Again, it's a Tower of Babel. The internet, television, movies, all of these things are flesh man's efforts to bring forth the kingdom of God. They yearn for the kingdom of God. What we do tells us really that which has to come. And everything up to now is a corruption. We're going to talk later on in the broadcast about how what people do today in relationships and what this corruption of homosexuality and transvestites and all this, it's actually prophesying what we are doing governmentally. And so whether it's our efforts to try to bring the kingdom of heaven to this earth with all of our technology or the United Nations, or NASA, or even NOAA, NOAA Weather Service. I was thinking about that today. It's not spelled the same way as NOAA, but it's man's efforts to understand and grasp the cloud formations in the weather. Well, NOAA knew. And so I find that it's significant that you've got a NASA and a NOAA that both prophesy concerning our ascension into heaven and this matter of predicting the rain. Chris, if I could, this is really what Remnant Bride is all about. We are nothing less than weathermen trying to understand the weather. In fact, when we held All Things in Common, one of the gentlemen who held All Things in Common, Byron, he was a weatherman. We've been trying to understand when Yahweh God is going to send His rain, and we've even been trying to see the clouds, which is actually going to lead right into our next point. We are trying to see the clouds even as intercessors to understand what Yahweh's doing to prepare for this rain. So I'm glad we talked about this. That's a whole string of things that I wanted to cover, and we did. Got any comments before we move on?
Yeah, a couple things quickly. When I read about the NASA and then understanding the spiritual implication of that, and then how man is really, his effort is to reach to the heavens, what an interesting comparison. The question that I would have, and I think the listener would ask this, is this. How is the bride any different? How do we make sure that we don't become a Tower of Babel, that we remain circumspect and keep this walk and this effort, if you will, in perspective, so that we don't become, that it does not become a flesh work like all the other works? What separates us? What keeps us in check and circumspect so that we do not go the same way that the world's gone?
I'm sure there are several answers that could be given to that, Chris. A lot of people say they walk by faith, but they don't even understand what faith is. That faith, they think, is just to do something whenever you don't see the evidence. You just do it, hoping God does something. I know in 1981, Yahweh said, I want to teach you faith. My response was, oh, Father. Actually, I didn't like hearing that because I didn't like any of the teachings on faith. I thought they were all wrong. You know, with your Copeland and Hagen and all of that, and the name it and claim it. I said, oh, Father, you already have a bunch of people out there teaching faith. But when Yahweh God says he wants to teach you something, you don't argue with him. I just grumbled because someone could say, oh, you're a grumbler. Well, he understood. I was turned off by everybody else's teachings. I say that because he taught me what true faith was. Hear, believe, act. I trust he taught me faith personally. He taught me faith because the walk that I had to walk had to be true faith, where I heard from God, I believed, and I acted. So I would like to think, and it's going to be seen, one of the things that makes it different is that Yahweh God came to a man in 1994 and began to teach me. I know whenever we were running the, and I'm going to tell a lot of stories in the time that we have here. Hopefully we'll get them all in. We were running our thrift store, which was a part of a ministry to the needy, and we weren't doing too good 1 month. And I said, Father, I didn't ask for this thrift store. This was your idea. I didn't want the thrift store, but you told me to start the thrift store. This is not my thrift store. It's your thrift store. And it looks like you could do a better job running your store. He didn't hit me for that one. He just answered me and said, I'm not building a business. I'm building a man. Well, I trust he is building a man. I trust what will make the bride difference is that what has to happen, Chris, it's not man reaching up to God. It's like the priest. You get a priest with both feet on the ground, and at Pentecost, all he can do is take two loaves of leavened bread. Can anybody say 2,000 years of Christianity, leavened Christianity? All he can do is plant his feet on the ground and wave them. That's all he can do. He could not take that bread, put it on an altar with fire, and send it up to God. Well, what has to happen is that we have to get out of this spirit of Christianity where all of our efforts are just us waving leavened works at God and Him not being pleased with them. What has to happen is Yahweh God has got to reach down to man and do something that He's never done before. Well, I say it's never done before. 2,000 years ago, God reached down to man and brought His Son and began the first remnant. But, of course, it breached. So He has reached down to man, but He reached down too early, if you would, before the time for the kingdom to really come. And it had to breach so it could be a split work. What I trust is going to be different concerning the bride is that Yahweh is reaching down to us and teaching us things that no man has ever heard. I remember one time back in 94 when he first started teaching me, my poor little brain was so full of new truth. You know, I didn't think he could push anything else into it. My little brain was about to explode. And I sat there in my desk chair one day, and I said, Father, don't tell me anything else. My little brain won't hold it. And he just immediately told me something else. I laughed out loud and spoke, and I said, Father, I can't believe you got that in there. So what has to happen, Chris, and time is going to tell, what has to happen is that Yahweh God has got to take personal responsibility to teach a person, to give him truth that he's never given anybody else before, and prepare the way for Emmanuel to come, and Emmanuel come down, because we know that we, as the bride, can't even affect the work that has to be accomplished. It has to be Emmanuel. But if we can't fulfill the Elijah and bring him to this earth, then it will get accomplished. Does that help answer your question about this Tower of Babel?
Well, it does, and I think the one thing that distinguishes, that makes this work, if you will, so unique, is that is the uniqueness of these truths, that the two-part bride, you know, the breach, and of course the list goes on and on of all the things that have been shown that no man has seen before, and that's what makes the bride unique. But again, we have to make sure that we don't become our own Tower of Babel and try and reach to the heavens to make this thing happen.
No.
And I know that you've been really cautious and circumspect about that, and teaching us that's, you know, we don't have our sandals on. We don't want to take responsibility for this. Yahweh takes responsibility. And so I think it's important that we understand the distinction between what brings about somebody working towards the Tower of Babel and how it is that we're not doing that.
In June of 1994, the Spirit came upon me and started teaching me all of these things. Now, we had a ministry to the poor at that time, and every month I would send out a newsletter. And, of course, my newsletter in June was quite unique. It was quite a change. But the newsletter the month before, the May newsletter, was very short. And it basically said this: I'm sitting here, and I do not know what to write to you on this occasion. And if I don't hear anything from God, this is going to be the shortest newsletter you have ever received. New paragraph. By God or not at all?
Yeah, there you go. All right.
And then I closed it.
Well.
And that's what it is, Chris. It's by God or not at all. Guarantee you, Gary Naylor will never try to be Elijah. Never. Because as soon as I try, I will ruin it. I will be an Uzzah. You don't try. You simply obey. You walk by faith. Even the things that I'm going to share today, I really weighed whether even to share them, but I feel like I should, and I will, and that has to do with some of the things that have happened in my life. In fact, I'll start with this one because it leads to this October 16, 2008 date that we have talked about and have written about. October 16, 2008 is where this whole journey began that we are on today, and we hope that we're going to see the fulfillment of the 2 years of the covenant with the many beginning by, say, November 4, because that would be Tabernacles. And then November 4 is the beginning of Tabernacles, and we hope that that is the beginning of this 2 year ministry period. Well, one of the things I realized after writing and after the last program was this matter of October 16. Now, there's a writing, I cannot remember what it is, you'd have to do a search that addresses this, but you'll understand. It talks about Mount St. Helens. Whenever I got to Washington in 1994, one of the things I studied was Mount St. Helens, because it was a testimony of Pentecost, and you have Spirit Lake doubling. So it's an outpouring of the Spirit. St. Helens is Saint Light. It's the same thing as Luke. And so you have this testimony of the work of Yahweh to establish the two-part remnant on this earth and the two outpourings of the Holy Spirit. I sent for an article from the Forest Service that explained what took place with that eruption and afterwards. What happened? You had the original eruption, and then there were five minor eruptions afterwards, and there was a lava dome being formed on it in the crater. And it went through each one of these eruptions, and they paralleled to my own children. I had two girls, a boy, and two girls. That's the same thing as Remnant Bride, Body of Christ, Remnant Bride. The middle of those eruptions, they were talking about the breach. They were concerned about the breach, a spirit lake. Well, that's what we're talking about concerning Christianity. It's the breach. The last two eruptions were so incredible in their dates that I took the report to my wife and with the piece of paper, and I went through each one of the eruptions. They were like June, a couple of them June, July, and then I got to the fourth one, and I pulled the piece of paper down. It was August 7th. And what's significant about August 7th? That's my birthday. It's also the day that the bride began, or the Elijah work began, depending on how you look at it, but that's when Yahweh God called me into the bride and had me to become a Mephibosheth and give everything to Ziba and move to Washington State. And she smiled when she saw my birth date, you know. And then I said, and then the fifth and final eruption, and it's the lava dome that is still there to this day, I slid it down. It was October 16. Her eyes got big as saucers. That's her birthday. And I walked away from her, and I said, Mavis, I'll never doubt again. To have those second remnant positions in Mount St. Helens, my birthday and her birthday. So it gives me hope that Yahweh used my birthday, August 7th, to be the beginning of the bride, in which he called me into the bride, established the Elijah work on this earth. And then now we have October 16 as the anchor. Again, another beginning point of this whole journey that we've been on for 2 years with the hope that we have now. It gave me further hope. Any comments about that? And there's, again, is, you know, Yahweh using a man and a woman, my bride.
Right, exactly. And you've got, you know, you've got a picture of the a man and woman, the natural groom and wife, and of course, the correlation in the spirit. And I know we can use the site search tool on your website to find that article where you wrote about that. And, you know, that's the thing that's always amazed me, that when we began to look at the testimonies or the patterns or the things, how many things are so relevant to your life that it you just can't deny these things, the dates, the years, the number of children. I could go on and on. It's just amazing how your life testifies in so many ways to these things, that you always definitely done something and is doing something with your life.
Well, how about this one, Chris? How many people do you know who have had five ravens as pets?
I only know one. I didn't even know that you could have a raven as a pet.
It probably became unlawful later on, but yes, I had five ravens as pets over a period of 24 years, probably. Now, one of my ravens, and I'm not going to get off on this too much, but my male raven, whenever I was beginning to date this girl, you know, and I didn't date very many girls, and I was beginning to date her, my ravens, the two that I had at that time, George and Louie, George is a female, Louie was a male, I got a phone call from the girl I was dating, and so she said, is your raven put away? And I said, no, they've been out all day. She said, there is a raven standing outside of my bedroom window on the neighbor's roof calling to me. So I walked outside, and sure enough, Louie was gone. I said, well, Louie's not here. I said, we had a date that evening. So I said, well, I'll come early and look. So I went over there, and Louie stayed there. Now, we're talking about several miles away. That raven had never left our area. They always stayed within the range of the home. I went over there, and there's Louie, still there, waiting for me. And I went up to him and tried to call him down, but I had a rule that if my ravens ever wanted to leave, they could go. It was their choice. So after calling him three times, I said, bye, Louie. And I went and got my girlfriend, and we went on our date. that girl that my raven went over to and called to her window is the one who became my October 16 birthday bride. That raven had never been away from my house, and he flew across town of all the homes, landed on a roof outside of her window, and called to her. Now, that was a miracle. And it speaks of the Elijah. The Elijah is the one who calls to the bride, who calls the bride, who identifies the bride. So, yes, that's just another example of Yahweh using me in a unique way, which I'm glad for. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with it. That was just going along for the experience. But let's talk about another one, Chris, that you and I talked about recently.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to have to try to keep these to the point. There were three occasions which Yahweh told me, I want to spend time with you. They were close to each other. By the way, before I say what they are, I remember this another brother, a Christian brother, we were talking about end times. And I was going home from work. I worked for a state agency, and I was going home one day, and I thought, you know, I think maybe we're talking too much about end times, you know, the coming of Yeshua, you know. I think we're talking about it too much. And I looked up, and there was this barrier immediately in front of me, and the barrier was numbered 666. I thought, maybe not.
Yeah. Of course, be careful now, Gary. You know, that's a mark of the beast.
Yes, yeah, if you're a Christian, if you're not, that's a wonderful, wonderful number. It's the bride. That's the beautiful golden temple, and those who are the descendants of Anakim, whose name meant ascending, which comes to those angels again. Well, when I was working for that state agency, I was on a journey. I would go out and take trips to offices, and I was coming back on one particular occasion, and I was going along, I can't remember the name of the river, but those rivers, they're the Inks, or I don't know what they all, they're Travis River, I don't know what they all are now, but they were riverways along there somewhere. I didn't know where they were, but I was going on the highway that would have been, the river would have been over to the right. Anyway, I was going along, and I just had this urge to speed up in the vehicle, and Yahweh spoke to him, and he said, he didn't say slow down. He said, I want to spend some time with you. Now, if I'd been real discerning, I would have thought, hold him, maybe I'm driving too fast. I keep driving like this, I'm going to be spending some time with him. And so I said, okay. It was lunchtime for me. I had my sack lunch with me, and I said, well, okay, where do I? I thought I'd just turn off the road here and just sit down and spend some time with Yahweh. You know, I had an hour for lunch. And so I said, do you mean turn here? And he said, nope. He didn't say nope. He said no. And I said, here? No. Keep driving. I said, okay, here? No. Okay, I got here? Yes, turn right. Okay, turn right. And I was going down this road. And I got into some woods. And then I was getting ready to go by a mobile home that was probably no more than 10 feet from the road. And I'm thinking, oh, great. Here I am in a state vehicle. And someone's going to say, what are you doing out here in the woods? And I went past it, nobody bothered me, and I kept going, and then there was this drop. The road went down the steep drop, and I thought, oh, great. I'm going to get down there. Some people are going to be there. This is their property. They're going to say, what are you doing with your state vehicle on our private property? And I was scared. But I knew Yahweh told me to go, and so I drove down there, and sure enough, I got to the river bottom. There was a river out there. It was beautiful. It was a grassy meadow. The grass was golden colored, and I got my sack lunch. I looked at the clock. It was exactly 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock time for my state lunch break. So I go over into the meadow. There's a tree laying there that probably had been washed along when the river was up. I sat down, and I was reading The Normal Christian Life. It was a wonderful book. It is a wonderful book. And I read it, and I finished reading, and I stopped, and Chris, I have never heard silence any more than what I heard at that time. Never in my life had I heard such quiet silence. I could hear the hum of my body. It was so quiet. I got up, And I had an apple, still going to eat my apple, and I thought, I'll walk down to the river and see it, and it's pretty. And so I had my apples, eating it, walked down to the river, and I thought, you know, I want to feed a little squirrel this apple core, you know. And I thought, well, I'll throw it down there about 10 feet or so, and looked like a good spot. And Yahweh basically said, no, I led you to this place. Just drop it right here. So I just dropped it right there, and I went back. Casually walked back to the vehicle, sat down, looked at my watch again for the first time. Since then, exactly 1 o'clock. And drove off and went back to the office. It was probably a couple of days later or so, 2 or 3 days later, and I was off work and on my way home. And Yahweh spoke to me and said, I want to spend some time with you. Okay, well, where do you want to go? And he said, turn here. Well, okay, this is normally the way I go home. Turn here. Yes, this is the way I go home. Then I got up to where I would turn right to go home. I said, turn here? He said, no. Okay. So I just kept going straight. Turn here? No. Turn here? No. Turn here? Yes. So I turned right, went down, and this road kind of came to an end, and there was a business on the right, and it had a big, tall, 12-foot chain-link fence, you know, security fence, and a parking lot in the back, and I looked back behind there, and there was a pond. He said, why don't you meet me right there? I thought, yeah. So I'm going to drive into that private property and park and sit at that pond behind their business? I said, Father, what are they going to do? Ask me, what are you doing back here on private property? Well, God told me to be here. Yeah, and I thought, oh, man, I can't do it. Again, I was scared. So I thought, look, I know what I'll do. I know where I am. I'll go back out. I'll go around. I'll get on the access road along the highway. I will park on the side of the access road. I'll cross the barbed wire fence, and then I can get to the pond. And sure enough, that's what I did. And I crossed, and then I found out in order to get to where he told me to be, I had to walk through the water. It wasn't real deep, but I had to walk through the water to get to it. And I went over there, and I sat down and stayed for just a little bit, and he said, okay, that's it. No, he didn't say that's it, that you can go. So I got up, walked through the water, got back in my car, and went home. 2 or 3 days later, it was at night. Yahweh said, I want to spend time with you. Okay, what do we do? He said, go for a walk. So I walked outside, and he said, walk up this road. It was dark. Walk up the road, and I walked up the hill from my house. And there were no houses behind where I lived. It was all open lot. Went down to a T. Okay, he said, turn left. Turned left. Went down a little further. And then there are houses that were on the back side or on the side of this that had already been built, but I was still in the big open area. He said, turn left, go behind those houses. Now, he didn't say go behind the houses, but I knew I was that's turn left. So I started walking along. Well, after a while, when you're walking behind houses, dogs start barking, saying, what are you doing behind my house? And I thought, oh, great. Just what I need. Police. They're going to call the police and say, we've got someone who is, you know, who's, what is he, a burglar? What's he doing behind our house and our dog's so disturbed? I thought, that's just what I need, is to be called with the police. What are you doing about here? Well, God told me to walk out here. You know, they'll probably take me to the psych ward at that point. Someone's probably thinking, Gary, I think you probably missed it the first time. You should have gone there and, you know, turned yourself in. And just when I was really anxious, a car turned, and it swept across this field in the night, and I saw a tree with out in the middle of this field, I saw a tree with the treehouse in it. Not a big, great big tree, but it was a tree with a treehouse. He said, I want you to get up in that treehouse. Okay, so I walked across the field, climbed up in it, sat there. Ah, Chris, it was beautiful. A beautiful experience. Sat there, and it was a beautiful, clear night. I could see the stars in the heavens. It was just so wonderful. And then Yahweh ended again in a brief amount of time. He said, okay, you can go now. I thought, oh, no, I just want to sit here. This is beautiful. I love this. And all of a sudden, ooh, I'm cold. I think I will go. So I crawled out of the tree and went back to the house. I didn't do that anymore. I did it 3 times. I didn't know what to think of it. I did know that all three of them had one thing in common, and that is, in order to get to where I was supposed to be, there was the threat of peril. That became very real to me whenever I came to know Remnant Bride, because that is exactly what happened in my life. The course that I was on was going to lead me to a place in which I thought I would fail and experience peril. And it was very, very real. Now, as you and I talked about when we were on the phone recently, if you look at the three, they really represent First Remnant, Christianity, Second Remnant. It says concerning the First Remnant in the book of Revelation, that is the seals, they are identified with the final seal that there was silence in heaven for 30 minutes. And that represents the First Remnant, the silence. Now, if I may say as a side note, one man said that proved his wife wouldn't go to heaven because there was silence for 30 minutes and he knew his wife wouldn't be able to. So Mabel wasn't going to make it. My dad, there was a lady who was a neighbor to his, and he said she's been vaccinated with a phonograph needle. So he told me. I had a great father. So the first one would have been First Remnant. Now the second one was Christianity. Now why? One, I was disobedient. He took me to that place, but I didn't obey him. I didn't do what he told me to do, and I had to go around, and I had to be baptized into death, if you would. Required by death. I had to walk through the water, be baptized, crawl over the barbed wire fence, get to that place, and then leave. Now, the third one would be the Second Remnant. Oh, this one's really nice. No silence. Yes, it was darkness, but what was beautiful was I crawled off of this earth into the air and sat there and beheld the glory of the heavens. So those have been encouragements to me. I went through an extremely difficult time beginning in really about 1996 up to 2003 was hell. March 31, 2003, Yahweh told me, you're going through a difficult place. You're going through a difficult place. Said it twice. I went through utter hell for a year, and on March 31 of 2004 my hell stopped and everything turned around. I remember one time, Chris, it was right before that you're going through a difficult place. I was going through a difficult time many times. I went out in the pasture there in Enumclaw, Washington. Now, Chris, at this point you might say, Gary, I think you've been vaccinated with a phonograph needle. You won't even let me say anything here.
No. No. I'm enjoying this. This is it's wonderful.
I went out in this pasture where we had dairy cows. I laid down on the grass, face down prostrate. In fact, where it was is where I buried my mom and dad's dog. That was actually the burial place. And I was laying down out there, and I said, Father, you have taken me so very low. I felt my body was just hugging the bare ground there. My face was to the ground, and I said, Father, you've taken me so very low. I was hurting so very much at that time. But the next words out of my mouth were, but Father, if you want to take me lower, I give you the right to do it. He took me up on it. Because it was after that that I lost my children. I lost my wife. She took me to court. I had to fight a court battle that I thought was going to destroy me. I didn't care whether I lived or I died. In fact, one night before I went to bed, I dreaded that the sun would even rise the next day. I went through hell for several years. But March the 31st, 2004, everything changed. Everything got better. And that's when we had a wonderful Passover event. So those are the stories concerning those three times that Yahweh said he wanted to spend some time with me. I have two more, but do you have any questions about those or any comments, Chris?
Well, I wonder if the time spent with him was an opportunity for him to just simply teach you, continue to teach you about the breach, the olive tree, lampstand, olive tree, or if it was an intercession, or both.
One of the things I think we will see as I share some of these other stories is that Yahweh was going to spend time with me, and he was prophesying it. He was prophesying it in small increments as to what he was going to do in a larger scale. And that would bring us to another example of this, if I may. This one really was not so much, I'm saying I want to spend time with you. This one was, whenever we moved from Austin, Texas to Dallas, Texas, there was about a year there that Yahweh began to just teach me. I knew I wasn't supposed to work. We had some money from the sale of our house. We had a home before that, and we actually sold the home for double what we paid for it. So we had the money, and we just used it. We paid the tithes on it. Pastor at the church was surprised that this poor guy could give such a big tithe once. But I've always been faithful with the tithe, and he's always held me to that. He has even spoke to me twice, you owe me a tithe. And I made sure and paid it. And he gave me the money to pay it, too. But whenever I got there, I spent the next year, and I called it Yahweh's University. It was his university in which he began to teach me the passing over principle, began to teach me the tithe principle. He taught me faith during that time. There were some wonderful things that he set me aside to learn. It's probably where I learned the 12 areas of the soul. I was in God's university during that year. Then my money ran out, and I got a job, and he humbled me, and I started cleaning carpets, which I did for 14 months. After the carpet time, while we were beginning to begin the ministry period, there was another occasion which Yahweh spoke to me, and I had to earn the money to pay the rent. So I had to do some carpentry and painting in order that we could pay our rent, which was $550. And I didn't have it. But Yahweh spoke to me, and he said, I want to spend some time with you. Okay. So I was to stay there and study the Word, seek Yahweh God, and spend time with him. Well, at the end of a few days, that got up to the weekend, I realized, hold it. This next week, I am going to go to my parents. I'll be there a week. At the end of that week, the rent will be due, and I would have had to have worked during that time in order to pay my rent. So I boldly went to the Father, and I said, Father, I don't mind working. I would have been glad to work for my rent. But you told me you wanted to spend time with me, and so I haven't worked. Now, Father, you need to pay my rent. And I really told it. I pressed it, and I presented it just that way. You need to pay my rent. Well, that Sunday, we went to church. It was right after that. God does use churches. And right after that, I was going to be leaving probably Monday. We were going to go to my parents' house. And I went to church, and I got a phone call later in the day from the church. And they said, Gary, someone put a check in the offering plate for you, so Monday morning you can come and pick it up. Okay, that's never happened before. So, great. So I get there Monday morning, and it's a check for $500. And I had 50, so God paid my rent. Now, I talked to that lady, because it was a check in her name, and I talked to her after I got back from the trip to my parents, and I asked her about it. She said, you know, I was sitting there in church, and I looked up and I saw you. She's a widow lady. I saw you, and God spoke to me and said, write him a check for $500. God paid my rent. Those are the kind of things I've had in my life. You say, whoa, what an exciting life. Oh, blah, blah, blah. There are some excitements you want to avoid if you can. The excitements like that are, if you don't do something, Father, I will perish. I will fail. You know, one of the most common statements I made during that period was, it's going to be interesting to see how he gets us through this one. Can I tell you another one, Chris?
Of course.
I haven't mentioned this one. We couldn't pay our rent. Well, I'm going to tell you two of them. I'm going to tell you a lot of stories. We couldn't pay our rent, and I was fearful that my family was going to be kicked out of the home. I couldn't pay the rent, and I looked over across the hall, and I saw my second daughter on the floor playing with her toys, and I said, that little girl could be out on the street next month. And fear gripped me. And Yahweh God spoke to me, and he said, did you not give them to me? And I said, yes, I did. He said, then I'm well able to take care of them. He paid my rent. I don't remember how he did it, but he paid my rent. There was another time, there are two things that really affect a man, is money and family. Those are the two things that really hit a man. And so, another time later, I could not pay the rent. I didn't know how I was going to even make it. And I was discouraged, deeply discouraged about it. Now, we had, my daughter one day came to me and said, Father, there's a little bird on the ground out front. So I walked around the front yard, and we looked on the ground, and there was a little bird. And I looked up in the tree, and I thought, huh, well, that just might be a blue jay. And I thought, boy, it's a blue jay. It looked kind of like a blue jay. Well, if it was a grackle, I'd kill it. So took it in the house, and we got a little dropper and started trying to feed it. I'd never been successful raising baby birds like that. And I tried when I was a boy. We started feeding it and went out the next day and looked up in the tree, and oh, no, there's Mama, a grackle. Oh, great, got a grackle. I thought, well, we've already bonded with this bird, you know, so we got to raise it. So we raised it, and sure enough, it lived. And it got to be a bigger bird, you know, and it would jump around the house and fly around the house. You know, I'd take it outside. It was bonded to me. It was, you know, we were his parents, you know. We went to a concert once where the children were going to play. And so what they did is they went into the women's restroom and took the bird in there and set the box down because, you know, we had to feed it. And so they put the bird in there and then locked the door and crawled under the stall. And and what they did is every now and then they would leave the concert and go feed the little bird, you know, because it was just now really starting to grow. Crawl back out of the stall, you know. So I eventually put the bird on an enclosure on our patio that was made of this fabric mesh material. I don't know what it's used for. But it was really nice. We could open the window and the little bird could come in. It was just a great little pet, you know, this grackle. And it's real strange. He had a little feather that hung down from one wing. It was just weird looking. It just hung down all the time. And well, we went over this couple's house one evening and came back late that evening, and there was a huge rip through that material, and the bird was gone. His name was Grack, real original. Grack was his name. And so I looked, and I called, and I called, and I called, and Grack was gone. And I just prayed a prayer. I said, Father, would you please take care of Grack? A year later, I was sitting in my dining room table. I was eating breakfast, and I was discouraged about finances. And I looked out there and looked out the window in the front yard. Yeah, the grackles were back. You know, and there was a little grackle down there with this weird feather hanging down off of his wing, and I didn't think anything about it. Went to work, came back for lunch, sat down at the table again, and looked out there. And there's that weird bird feather. And I thought, Grack. This is where he was born. He was raised. His egg was laid right up there in that tree, you know. And I went outside and said, Grack. And he did what he always did as a young bird. He goes, quack, 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 quack. I said, Grack, and he flew to another tree, and he said, Grack, how you doing, buddy? Grack, 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 grack. And so he obviously recognized me. He didn't fly off. He recognized, hey, you know, just my old comrades, you know. But then he flew off, and I never saw him again. And I went down, sat down at the table to finish my lunch, and I knew if Yahweh God took care of Grack, Gary, isn't he going to take care of you? I thought about that so many times since then, too. If he took care of old Grack, he's going to take care of you. Okay. You mind if I keep talking?
Please. I'm really enjoying this.
Okay.
Not a problem.
So we saw that when Yahweh God wanted to spend time with me, he paid my rent, right? He was faithful. He wanted to spend time with me. Chris, I believe, and I'm going to tell you one more story. I believe that spending time with me was, he kept saying these things to point out that he is going to spend time with me. And I would say that was from 94 to where we are today. What he was really speaking of, I want to spend time with you. In the bigger picture, it wasn't just for those occasions which he met my rent, and he's taking care of me for these 16-plus years right now. But he wanted to spend time with me. It's like when my father, my Alzheimer's father, he knew barely that I was his son. He was going to have surgery, and I was in the hospital room with him. And my father hadn't used my name in years. And my father said, Gary, you have a beautiful face. Gary, you have a beautiful face. He said it twice. I don't think that was my earthly father speaking. I think it was my heavenly father speaking through my earthly father, because my father did not know my name with his Alzheimer's. He died shortly after that. And I do pray that, like Moses, who talked with God face to face, I pray that I have a relationship with him in which he really does want to talk with me. He really does want to spend time with me. Because I still am at a risky place, nothing like what I used to be. But Chris, you're right. It's by God or not at all. So when we come to this Tabernacles that has a beginning point of October 16th, 2008, October 16, my bride's birth date. We have hope that Yahweh's going to do something. Now, I want to tell you one more story that I related to you in our phone conversation, and it will help people to understand the difficulty that I'd gone through. Actually, there are two of them I could tell. Oh, one of them's long. I'm going to do it, Chris. I'm going to tell
them.
I'm going to tell both of them. I don't know how long this program is going to be. Maybe an hour and a half long. Okay. I was dreaming. One night, I had a spiritual dream. Now, I don't have spiritual dreams very often. I think I've had one vision, and I've had a few spiritual dreams. And this was one of them. I was in a movie theater, and this theater was Gothic. Is that the right word, Gothic? Romanesque. It was Romanesque on the inside. It was just huge, like a movie theater, okay?
Okay.
I went into it, and all of a sudden it started filling up with water. It got full, and all these octopus tentacles were trying, they were just all in the water trying to grab me. And they couldn't get me. And then I walked out of the theater. I walked on the front of this huge Romanesque building. It would be like something that was built in Washington, D.C., and I walked out on the front porch, and a man came up with a diving helmet on his head, dragging a hose. And he had on a diving suit, you know, the old kind. And I thought, well, at least he knows what he's getting into. I didn't know there was going to be water in that theater. I realized later that theater was a type of Christianity. That's, in fact, a Christian brother told me that he had just had that experience, that Christianity is like a theater where they entertain people, and that's what most churches do. They entertain people. So it was a type of Christianity that Christianity could not hold me, and that I had to come out of Christianity. The gentleman with the big diving bell on his head, actually, there was a fellow named Joseph Heron who came to my home. I knew that he was the fulfillment of that diving bell on the head. Joseph Heron actually has a large cranium. And I said, I don't mean to offend you by this, but I really know that this is the fulfillment of that. And he is in Christianity. So what I did is the gentleman walked by, I walked down the steps, I went out to the street, I got in a car, and I started driving, you know, parallel to the front of the theater. I drove down the street. It was a hill. I drove down it, and then there was a stoplight in front of me, traffic light. It was red. The other traffic had the green, and they were going through a lot of traffic, buzzing through it. I put on the brakes, and my car started spinning around and round and round and round. It spun around it right into the intersection and spun and turned left and went down and stopped. I didn't have an accident. Got out of the car. I walked across the street, came back up the hill towards the theater. This theater was very long. I'd say it's 100 yards long. And it was, again, big Romanesque building. And I heard these chains, iron chains, clanging. And I knew they were demon spirits. So I raised up my hands and placed my palms towards the back of the building, and I moved my palms all the way towards the front. And as I did, there were huge iron doors that were slamming, And I knew what they were doing was binding demonic spirits. And so I got all the way to the front, and I quit. I walked back up on the front of the building. Then I walked back down the steps again, except this time over to my left was a big cave entrance. I walked over to the cave entrance. I held my hands in front of me once again, probably had them out a little further this time to my sides, and I knew I had to hold my hands up because I knew there was evil in the cave. I walked down into the darkness. After a while, I could see, and I noticed over to the well, actually, after a while, somebody was hitting my right arm. They were hitting it. They were touching me, my right arm, my hand, and I noticed out of my peripheral vision that they were frozen statues in action stances, as though they were stopped in life. Just action stances, running or bending over, anything. They were solid gray stone statues, and they were touching me and coming alive. Nothing was to my left. Over to the right were all these statues on the other side of a rail. I noticed down at the end of the cave there was a bright light. I walked down at the end of the cave. There was a platform about 12 feet deep, I'm guessing, or maybe 18 and about 24 feet wide, something like that. It was about a foot and a half tall. And on it, and this is bright light down here, on it were what I knew were the apostles. They were in robes. I went over to the left side of that platform. I stepped up on the platform. They were in rows of 4, 4, and 3. And there was a space empty, and I walked to the back of the platform, stood there on that back row with the rest of the apostles, and the dream was over. Now, that dream has given me hope that I am in that office of the 12th apostle. It's one of the things that I could say that is not of me. It's not just learning about what that office is. It is, in fact, something that God worked. Chris, I'll ask you a question. Did Solomon ask for wisdom?
He did.
Actually, you're wrong. Solomon, and most people think that, and I did too. Solomon dreamt that he asked for wisdom. In a dream, he asked for wisdom. And I believe that Yahweh does things like that because what he's doing, he's going to accomplish something that is his will. And we don't get the glory. If Solomon had asked for wisdom, one could say, well, Solomon was a wise man to ask for wisdom. No, he dreamed that he asked for wisdom. And for me to have that dream, that was not of me. It gives me hope that he has, in fact, chosen me to be in that office of the 12th apostle. The other thing that dream speaks of is that, again, that car spinning and was getting ready to go into an intersection of a lot of traffic with a red light, and me making it through it encouraged me that I was going to make it through my difficulties. I wish a person could understand how perilous it was in my life at some point. There was one time I remembered, I cannot understand how David could ever say, "Yea, though I pass through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." I thought, how can he say that he wouldn't fear any evil? I had so many fears in places where I was in my life, I couldn't even understand how David could even say that. I went through one point, Chris, where I was in so much pain that I spoke to Yeshua and I said, you know, at this point in my life, 3 hours on a cross looked mighty inviting.
Yeah, that's pretty bad when you get to the point where you can say something like that, which obviously would be an awful experience in and of itself.
For me at that time, Chris, to have had this pain over in 3 hours, that was a dream, because I knew my pain was going to continue to be unbearable for a long period of time. So whenever I saw that car spinning, you know, in that dream, I thought, maybe I'll make it. Maybe I'll make it. It doesn't look like it. One time I wrote a list of all the things that could destroy me, and I wrote them just to see, once I got on the other side, if I'd actually get through and not be destroyed. Here's another dream that I had that gave me hope and encouragement too. And I know you have some questions that you want to ask about it, and we'll turn to those. There was another dream I had, and in it, I was in a car with a woman. And we were going to go see this woman prophetess. And we drove there. I was driving. We drove, and the area where she was, it was like a quarry, in that her driveway went down into the rocks, and then with a ramp, it would have been equivalent to at least a two-car wide driveway. And we drove down that ramp, and then it leveled out. It was a short distance, but it went down the ramp. I would say we were under the ground probably 18 feet or something like that. And the woman got out, and over at the left was this cleft of a rock. It was a cleft of a rock. It looked almost like a woman. So she got out and she said, I will go talk to the woman prophetess and see if you can come in. And so she went and went through the cleft of the rock. After came out, she came over to my side of the car and she said, the woman prophetess said that you can't come in. She said, I'll go back in and talk with her. And my thoughts were, oh, no. What does she know about me? Maybe I've done something wrong. And so I didn't know what to expect at that point. And so I was concerned about what she knew about me. And all of a sudden, Chris, this earthquake started shaking and shaking and shaking. And the car started rattling and stones started falling. And the car started shaking up the ramp. It can't went backwards, up the ramp, backwards. And the earthquake was so violent that the ground started boiling and trees were being sucked into the ground. In fact, the car that I was in started melting and it was being sucked right into the ground underneath me. And I was eventually under this just a pool of a car, and the car had gone backwards and then it turned to its left and went in front of where the cave would have been. And all of a sudden, I was picked up off of that molten material that disappeared, and I was put on something else, and it continued to shake. It turned left again and went basically over where the prophetess would have been, and it was about to disappear too, and then all of a sudden the earthquake was over. That was the dream. Well, looking at it now, I had it before Bride. I had no idea what it meant. looking at it now, I go, let's see, hidden in the cleft of a rock, a woman prophetess. So it's got to be Christianity. A woman went over there with me. This prophetess was obviously killed. And so actually the reason the woman prophetess would not allow me in it was because if I had gone in there, I would have been killed. And so I was encouraged by that, in that I didn't perish, especially whenever this violent earthquake was taking place and swallowing everything on the surface. But again, Chris, that is what my life was like for several years. It was like an earthquake was taking place. It was sucking down everything that I had. It sucked my family right down to it. Everything that I had disappeared. I thought I was going to lose my life. But Yahweh preserved me, and there were many times in which I would look at that and think, well, hopefully I'll get through this. Hopefully I'll get through this. And Yahweh was faithful. And so those are some examples of dreams that I've had, testimonies where Yahweh spoke to me of what to do, that have encouraged me and given me hope over the years. And again, it was not Solomon's request for wisdom. God had him to dream wisdom because God was going to work the work in him, and it wasn't Solomon himself. And that is our hope today, that this is the work that Yahweh's doing, that he's performing these things just like Solomon's wisdom was from him, that I trust that all these things are from him as well. So a long string of stories, but I hope that you and everybody enjoyed them.
Well, I did, and I think the listening audience will. And so, you know, you look at these dreams. You, of course, the earthquake is, that one is really easy. See, I don't understand the significance of the prophetess, but you know, the earthquake, certainly you were going through an earthquake in your life, and you didn't succumb to it. You weren't buried by it. And so those are all wonderful, wonderful dreams and testimonies of your life. And, you know, may it be that Yahweh continues with you to show you his truth and to feed his bride to these wonderful truths. And as we approach atonement and into tabernacles, we anxiously wait to see if Yahweh will do something.
Very much so. Very much so. So do you have any other questions? I mean, one of the things we talked about, I think you said, well, why is it a woman prophetess too?
Well, yeah, when we discussed this earlier, I know what the scriptures teach about women, and women especially teaching, it's pretty clear, but also we have the prophetess, Deborah, who Yahweh used. And so where do you stand with that? How do you reconcile what you've taught about women teaching and Yahweh maybe using a woman as a prophetess? How do you reconcile those two things?
The difficulty we have right now, Chris, is we're still in the natural. And while we're in the natural, we are obligated to certain laws of male-female. Now, when we get into an immortal, incorruptible, born from above body, we don't have to be concerned about that. There is neither male nor female within the bride people or even within the body of Christ when they enter into that state. Until then, they are locked into a male-female relationship. Some women want to say, well, but Paul said, let me see if I can find that scripture. Paul said in Galatians 3:28, there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free man, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Paul is not trying to say that there is no distinction between male and female. If there was, he would not have also written in 1 Corinthians 14:34 through 35 that a woman is to keep silent in the churches, and she's not permitted to speak, but to subject themselves, just as the law also says, that if they desire to learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is improper for a woman to speak in the church. That's the same person who wrote, there's neither male nor female. So a woman's really bending that scripture, making it say something that it doesn't say. He wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy 2:11 and 12, a woman must quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness. I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise the authority of a man, but to remain quiet. Here's Isaiah 3:12. It's an amazing passage. O my people, their oppressors are children, and women rule over them. O my people, those who guide you lead you astray and confuse the direction of your paths. The place of the woman is as a servant, Chris. She is not to teach. She is not to exercise the authority of a man. He says, Adam was not deceived, but the woman was greatly deceived. There is no place for a woman to exercise the authority of a man, either in teaching or in pastoring or in any kind of authority role. Yeshua came the first time in a female role. He said, I came to serve, not to be served. He will come again in a male role, in a role in which he rules, has the right to rule, and he teaches. You say, well, he taught while he was here before. Very little compared to what he knew. He taught most of it in parables. He did teach, but he did not fulfill the teaching role that he could have. He spoke in parables. So he was very limited in his teaching compared to what he knew. But the scriptures are very clear that a woman does not have the authority to teach. Now, one of the things that people need to understand and realize, I was talking with a gentleman today about this, and it finally clicked for him. In the ways of Yahweh God, he is the male, and all creation is the female. So that the male always has a right to rule over and govern the female. It's the way of God. So when a female wants to be like the male or equal to the male, which is the curse of Genesis 3:16, when a female wants to be in that place, she is usurping her place. She does not have the right to be in that role. And so that's the same as Chris, you or I, or anybody else saying, God, I don't agree with you. I think you're wrong. And I'm going to do this in my life. And I reject him. There are consequences for that. There are consequences for women usurping the place of their husband. You know, I was thinking of something recently, and I hope that a person got that. The relationship between God and the creation is an identical relationship between a man and a wife. Even male and female. That doesn't mean that a man has a right to tell every woman what to do. That's not the case. A husband has a right to govern over and to instruct his wife. In fact, the scripture says that she is to obey her husband. That's Ephesians 5:24. She is to obey her husband in everything. Does that mean to do wrong? No, that's not what he's saying. But look at the scope of it. And it's the same thing like we're reading 1 Peter 3:1 through 6. Peter instructed a woman to be submissive to their own husbands. And it says, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children, if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. A woman is in a wonderful place when she submits to her husband. In fact, that whole passage begins there in Peter. It starts out in verse 1. It says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. In the same way. What's in the same way? If you go to 1 Peter 2, the two examples are a servant submitting to a master when the master is an unjust master. And Peter says, you servants, submit to that master because it finds a reward with God. Then he gives the example of Yeshua, who submitted himself to man, even to the point of death. Are you saying that women should die? He just laid out Yeshua as an example of submission to authority. So are you saying, Gary, then that the nations and the Pharisees had authority over Yeshua? Indeed, they did. He came too early. He came in a period of time in which the nations had a right to rule and Satan had a right to rule. And he submitted to that ungodly government and it found favor with God. The only reason, ladies, the only reason we have salvation today is because Yeshua knew the principle of the female submitting to the male. Can you get that? Can you get it without rebelling? When a woman submits to authority, to the male, She enters into the same blessing and the same benefit as Yeshua submitting to authority, even to the point of death. Wives, how much more so are you to submit to your husband? There's something that I thought of recently. I'm really a no-nonsense person when it comes to truth and doing what's right. I'm really no-nonsense. I'm not going to compromise truth, and I'm not going to compromise right. I can be tempted to compromise. I'm like any other man. I suffer temptations like anybody else. Sin crouches at the door of everybody. But as is written in Genesis 4, you must rule over it. You must master it. Yeshua was tempted in every manner as a man, without sinning. Temptation is not sin. But there is a tremendous deception right now concerning the place of the woman. I have a note on my wall, and some people would object to it. A woman, you shouldn't say, I have my rights, but I have my place. Would you expect anything less of Yeshua to say, it's not I have my rights, I have my place. I do the will of my Father. He did not do his own will. Women are obligated in the same manner. And people who are under the authority of government, the same manner. If you look at the Elijah, who is the prophet like Moses, it says you either obey him or you'll be cut off from the people. Why? It's male, female. It's the right to rule and the obligation of the people under that man's rule, because it's never a woman. The woman does not have the rod. If she had the rod, and I'm talking about anatomically, then she would have the right to rule. She does not. God has not given her the right to rule. She is to be a servant. She is to submit to the man. Now, I was thinking recently, with having said that, I watched a video about a transsexual man who became a woman. I'll give you a definition of transsexual. It's a person whose sexual identity is with the opposite sex, a person who has even undergone a sex change. Transvestite is a person who adopts the dress, manner, and sexual role of the opposite sex. Now, how many people out there would do what that man did and change their physical sexual identity? Here's my challenge to you. Which is of greater significance, the spiritual or the natural? We can do things in the natural, but really what is most impacting is what we do in the spiritual. In fact, what we'll see is the natural and the spiritual are related. But if you look at that and you say, that's terrible that that man changed into a woman, and there are women that change themselves into men. Now I'm going to ask you, ladies, the definition of a transsexual is a person whose sexual identity is with the opposite sex, a person who has undergone a sex change. Transvestite, a person who adopts the dress, manner, and sexual role of the opposite sex. Most women cross-dress. They fulfill this definition. A transvestite is a person who adopts the dress. A woman who adopts the dress of a man. How about the male's pants? What are you doing in a man's pants? Well, all women wear them. Doesn't make it right. It just shows you the scope of the wrong that is taking place in this nation, in this world. They adopt the manner and the sexual role of the opposite sex. What's the sexual role? We're not talking about just some kind of aberrant sex. The sexual role. Who has the right to rule? Who has the right to be the head in the home? Ladies, when you reject your husband, you are becoming a transvestite. You are fulfilling the definition of a transvestite. Men, when you abdicate to your wife and you do not take your place as a man and you let her rule, you are becoming a transvestite. You might as well be wearing a dress. Just like your wife is probably wearing the pants. Folks, can you get it in your understanding that today is hugely aberrant and contradictory and certainly in violation of the laws of God, in that women are becoming transvestites and taking the role in the place of a man. It's the same thing as creation rejecting God, wanting to be equal to Him. I said in a program recently, when Eve ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, she was wanting to become like the man. The tree of life is female. Eve means life or lives. The tree of life is female. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil is male. It says whenever she ate it, Yahweh said, she has become like us, knowing good and evil. That's a male role. There's God the Father, God the Son, and there's not God the sisters. It is a male office role. So when Eve ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, she wanted to be like the male. Ladies, when you wear our pants, you're eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, wanting to be like a man. When you cut your hair short, like a man. When you wear your makeup so that you can be more appealing and more attractive than the male, and you're trying to usurp his glory, and you want to take that glory, then you're being a transvestite. When you want to rule and take the role of your husband, and you say, well, my husband won't rule, step aside and let him rule. Step aside. Go to your husband and say, honey, I have done wrong. I am usurping you, and I want you to be the head of this home. I'm going to tell you another personal story, Chris, and for the listener. Whenever I started dating my wife, we were not Christians, really active Christians. And I was a young guy, and of course, in dating, when you're in cars by yourself, which are a curse, I wanted to be passionate and go, you know, as far as I could go. It was a quest, you know, it was a challenge, you know. And she told me one time, she said, Gary, what you want, I don't want, but I give myself to you. Well, that's the best thing that my wife could do for me. I cannot tell you that that's the case for all men. But for me, it was like, okay, now it's my responsibility. I've got to take responsibility for her. And I kept her a virgin until we married. And the reason I did, the competition was gone. Now it was my responsibility. Men need to sense the weight of that responsibility. If your husband's not leading, you need to help him to lead. You don't accomplish anything by saying, well, he's too weak. No, let him learn to lead. Buy him a book on how to be a man. Encourage him to be a man. Tell him, honey, I'm going to start letting you lead. So when he asks, what do you think? Well, I'll give you my opinion, but you just support him. You uphold him. Quit being a transvestite. Get into a dress and say, honey, I'm going to be a woman now. And you're going to wear the pants in the family. And every time you put your pants on, you see me put a dress on, you're going to know you are the head of this home and you are going to wear the pants in this family. Before I married my wife, I had three things that I told her before I even asked her to marry me. And I think that it's God in me who did this. I said, number one, I wear the pants in the family. And I would have been about 19 years old when I said this. I said, number two, when I get out of college, you will quit working and you will never work again. You will raise our children. I said, number three, the word divorce will never, ever come up in this family, in this marriage. The word will never even come up. You don't threaten, I'm going to divorce you. I heard that whenever I was being raised. I had an ulcer in the fourth grade over my parents fighting. I had an ulcer. I had to go on an ulcer diet because of my parents fighting. I hated to see weekends even come because I knew what they would be. They would be a fight between them and threats of divorce. I said, the word divorce will never come up in this family. Folks, get serious with God right where you are. You say, I want to go to heaven. Fine. Then bring the laws of heaven to earth where you are. If you want to go to heaven, establish the laws of heaven in your life, in your family, in your personal life. in what you say and in what you do. That is the heaven you need right now. You need the government to do what is right. Don't be a transvestite. Don't be a transsexual. Don't be an adulterer and be a part of the world. Here's another one. Spiritual adultery. I saw that for all the adulteries of faithless Israel, I had sent her away. They were committing spiritual adultery. You adulteresses, do you know that friendship with the world is hostility towards God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend with the world makes himself an enemy of God. You adulteresses, say, I don't commit adultery. What do you look like, ladies? What are you doing, men? Are you hanging around with men who are ungodly men? It is time to get real. You're going to stand before God. And having listened to this broadcast, you now know the truth, and you will be held accountable. And I pray that October 16, 2008 is a benchmark for us that's going to give us what we need in the time ahead. I would love nothing better than to preach what you're hearing right now. And that is personal accountability and righteousness. Ladies, are you going to start dressing like a woman? Are you going to submit to your husbands and everything? You need to do these things. It's not a time to play games. So, we're going to go long. I'm going to mention this very briefly, and that'll be the end of the time. You say, well, what about Deborah? She was a prophetess. She was a judge. Well, did you know that Deborah was set under it says that Deborah sat under a palm tree. Do you know what the word palm tree means? The word palm tree literally means she sat under an erect. Do you know she had a husband by the name of Lapidoth? And do you know what his name means? His name means burning torch. Do you remember in Genesis 15, you have the covenant with Abraham, and he laid out the covenant parts, four parts on one side, four on the other, and he put Abraham to sleep, which is the body of Christ, and a smoking oven, which is female, the womb, and a burning torch passed between the covenant parts. Smoking oven, female. Burning torch, male. It's a rod with a burning head. She had a husband who was a rod with a burning head. She sat under a palm tree, which is really the Elijah work at this time as well. She is a type and picture of the bride. And in the battle that had to be carried out, she sent Barak in the battle to go kill Sisera, and Barak wouldn't go without her. And she said, okay, you will not get the glory, but a woman will, which was Jael. Now, you rebellious women, you rebellious-minded women, don't start thinking, ah, there's my woman. There, see, I have the right. These two women, Jael and Deborah, were types of the bride. Let me tell you, ladies, you get yourself in an immortal, incorruptible body that's neither male nor female, and you stand beside Emmanuel to rule and reign with him for 1,000 years, you will then have the right to rule. You will be a Deborah then. You will be a Jael who kills the Sisera, who takes the tent peg and drives it through his head into the ground and destroys Satan. But ladies, don't come before your time. Don't try to take the kingdom by force. Submit to Yahweh now and learn his ways and learn to be a female. Enter into immortality, and then male and female alike will be in a female role as the bride of Emmanuel, and we will rule and reign with him. But until then, ladies, prove that you can walk just like Yeshua walked in a female role. And quit being a transvestite. If you want to be a Deborah, then learn to serve, just like Emmanuel proved. Okay, Chris, that covers everything that I wanted to address, and I hope that it's been a real help to people.
Well, I think it will, Gary, and you know, you put a lot out there, and I think there's a lot for us to digest, and so it's, I don't know that we've ever gone this long on any of our radio programs, and so it'll be interesting to see what the final product is on this.
Yes, it's going to be about an hour and a half, my brother, at least. So,
okay.
So it's a lot for people to chew on, and I'm glad to share these truths with you. And I hope that they have been a help, and I hope that you will put them to practice, because your own spiritual well-being and the well-being of others and the well-being of the church and the well-being of society is dependent upon you individually.
Amen. Well, blessings to you, sir, and we look to Yahweh, we look to atonement, we look to tabernacles for him to do a work, and we give him thanks for you, for the gift that he's given us in our midst. We're very grateful for you and appreciative to have you in our life.
Well, may Yahweh ever increase us, brother, as we look to him for these days ahead. So Yahweh bless you.
All right, blessings to you. We'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.